Welcome to Generation Radio Podcast, where the focus is on Arkapuna and their families. We are here each Sunday morning from 8 to 9 a.m. on the Oldies Channel, 101.1. You can listen to these shows at any time, any place, and even on your smartphone at generations808.com. We will bring to you resourceful information from our Generations team of experts in the field of aging. Stay with us for the next 1 hour as we explore ways to make your life more exciting and meaningful for our extraordinary seniors. Here's your host and publisher of Generations Magazine, Percy Ihara.
Okay, welcome back to Generations Radio. I am Percy Ihara, your host, as you guys know, every Sunday morning, 8 to 9 a.m., here on 101.1. And guys, let me tell you, it's amazing how many people I talk to that they say, I listen to that channel. Almost daily, I run into people. I saw some friends at a restaurant the other day. I was eating at Shokudo. So, yeah, I listen to that radio. I hear your show. It's amazing. But anyway, if you're on the way to the golf course, stay in the short stuff, because I know a lot of you guys have told me you're on the way to the golf course. How can you be at the golf course if you're taping a radio show? I don't do it live, guys. I tape it during a weekday. And thanks to G3N and here at 101, they allow me to bring in our guests here. Sometimes they call in. But, yeah, that's how we do the show. I have a passion for aging. I was telling this potential client this morning that I do a lot. And because I love this industry, I've done a lot of research studying. I got certifications in this. I counsel families almost every day. I do workshops now almost weekly. So it's just something I love to do. And we are a major resource for families. Just go to generations808.com or you can give me a call. I'm in the magazine, or email me. But yeah, we provide resources, we provide solutions with trusted experts in the field of aging. They're not there to sell you anything, but the website, generations808.com. So I've been involved in entertainment in terms of going to concerts, love concerts. I love the Blue Note, by the way. I just saw Tower of Power there a couple months ago. Wow, it's amazing. They're in the 70s and still blowing. I mean, I saw Average White Band, if you remember who they were. They were in the 70s now, blowing. I mean, wow. I was like, how'd they get that kind of energy? Man, I thought I had energy, you know. But anyway, this guy's got a lot of energy. We're partnering with Kumu Kahua Theater downtown here. If you haven't been there, please go and check it out. I'm trying to encourage people to get out and enjoy entertainment. And we have a lot of great actors, guys. I mean, look, we had Hawaii Five-0, we had Magnum P.I., we have now NCIS Hawaii, which my wife loves because they show Waikiki. It's really beautiful. Unfortunately, they go from Kalakaua Avenue to Wahiawa in a split second, but that's okay, guys. The tourists don't know that. The guys on the mainland don't know that, even though we may know it. But once in a while, guys, you ever look at it, watch the show, and say, wow, where is that? And it takes you a little while, but they film, and I that's why I love watching the show. And, of course, the other ones that's being brought back is Magnum P.I. is coming back on NBC. So our guest has probably been on all the shows. He's been on, you've seen his face before. So let's see if he recognizes his voice. Today we have Dan Secchi, a veteran of the theater industry. And I've seen him before. When I walked in the studio here, I knew exactly who he was. So anyway, Dan Secchi, welcome to the show.
Good morning. Welcome. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, give us a little background before we talk about what you're doing now at Kumu Kahua Theater. But, you know, you're retired and you understand you were in the military for a while?
I was on active duty for 8 years with the military. Yes. Stationed in Kentucky.
Kentucky?
Yeah, I know.
Wow.
Fort Knox, Kentucky, home of the gold vault.
Right.
It actually is there, by the way.
Right.
Although
right.
They won't allow anybody to go in to see the gold. But
please,
you can see the building. You know, you have to watch the movie to see Odd Job in there guarding the gold.
Yeah, that's right.
So my background, my degree is in audiology and health services administration. So that's what I did for the Army. I worked as an audiologist. And then after I got off active duty, I went to work at Pearl Harbor for the Navy.
Oh, really?
Basically doing the same thing in audiology.
Oh, wow.
Mostly prevention. You know, people, as soon as I say audiology, people say hearing aids.
Right.
And I go, yeah. I did a little bit of that. But most of my work with the government has been in, or was in, prevention. You know, a lot of the military and civilian workers are exposed to loud noises, and that causes hearing loss. And so the audiologist's job is to make sure they don't. And so a lot of what I did was what we call conservation of hearing, rather than treating the hearing loss once it's there. Yeah, we try to work with the guy.
What else can you do besides give them earplugs?
Yeah, well, that's what we have to do, right? Exactly. You know,
hey, but I got something in my pocket here.
trying to get somebody to stick a simple pair of earplugs in their ears. Not
sense.
So easy, you know.
That makes sense.
All you have to do is drive down any of these streets that nowadays are being fixed. I mean, it seems like every street is being fixed, right?
Oh.
And look at these guys working with the jackhammers and all these things. I rarely see anybody using hearing protection, which
as an audiologist
really bothers me. I almost feel like I need to jump out of the car and hand a pair
of
earplugs.
Maybe
you should
donate.
Yeah, but then I'll cause the accident, right?
I mean, you should get a donation. But it's true. I mean, I know for myself, I love music, so I used to go to a lot of concerts when I was young. And in fact, they told me Walkman caused a lot of this. They said, maybe you may know. So when you're exercising or running and your heat level is higher, they say if you wear a Walkman or had music in your ears, especially if it's loud, it increases the loudness of it, intensifies loudness. So like right now, I notice sometimes when my wife asks me questions, I can't hear her.
Yeah,
I say, what did you say?
Is that by choice, though? But
well, yeah. convenient amnesia? Is that what you call that? No, I don't want my wife pissed off.
Yes, sure. We don't want you getting in trouble here. Yes.
But that's what I heard, the Walkman caused a lot of this, because right now I'm only 62, but I slowly hear less, I can tell.
Mm-hmm.
Even when I'm watching TV, I have to turn the music, the volume.
And that's kind of the problem with hearing loss. It just kind of creeps up on you. Most people don't even realize it's happening until it's there. And then all of a sudden you're going, wow, I missed that, you know?
Yeah, but you know, men don't want to wear hearing aids.
Of course not. Yeah.
My dad didn't wear it. I walked into the house one day, you know, when my son was young and TV was blaring and I walk in. I could hear from outside my living room window. I walked in, like, he's sitting right next to it. Like, Jesus Christ.
Yes.
So how did you get involved in entertainment? Were you always involved in entertainment?
Yeah, I was always interested in performing.
Like high school days or younger?
That's right. Yeah, I started in high school days. And, of course, the age-old question is what high school you went to. I went to IAEA High School.
Oh. Joe Morris High School.
Joe Morris, yeah.
Oh,
he was a year after me.
Oh, really?
In IAEA High School. So he's a youngster. yes. In fact, we were the first graduating class at IAEA High School.
And that was
19. So why am I giving away my age?
It's okay. You already know.
1964, first graduating class at IAEA High School.
Really? That was the first year. I was kind of curious because I know my friend graduated, was the first graduating class of Mauna Loa.
Mm.
And I believe that was 76, 75.
You can tell generations by what high school they went to if they lived in IAEA all their lives. The earlier generation went to Waipahu High School,
right?
Because that's the closest high school
there
was. And then the later generations went to Radford High School.
Oh yeah.
So like Bette Midler, for example, went to Radford High School. She lived in the IAEA area, and then of course when we came along, IAEA High School was there, and so you can tell kind of what generation they're in just by saying, well, what high school did you go to?
Especially that area alone.
Especially if I live in IAEA and I went to Radford, well, then I know that that person is older than I am.
Wow, so older if you went to Waipahu.
Yeah.
Wow, that's a long way to trek.
Yeah. And then when Pearl City High School was built, then the people who lived in, you know, that little gap between Pearl City and IAEA, a lot of them came to IAEA High School. But when Pearl City High School was built, then they started going there.
When did Pearl City High? Do you know when Pearl City High School was built?
No, I don't remember.
Was it older than? IAEA then?
No, it's younger.
Oh, younger than
IAEA? Yeah.
Oh,
it came up later on. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, I think the governor might have been in one of the early classes at Pearl City High School.
I believe he was because my brother went.
If not the first, then one
my
of the
brother was went there until before he went to MidPack.
Yeah. So I was always interested in
high
performing.
School plays
High school plays,
really?
You know, programs and stuff like that. And then when I went off to college, this was right kind of in the peak of the Vietnam period, in the mid to late 60s. And so you couldn't really fool around too much because you didn't want to flunk out because you know what the next option was. So so I didn't do too much performing in college. In fact, I didn't really do any performing until I got out of the military. So all through college and during the military. I should back up a little bit. When I was at Fort Knox, I happened to hang out with a few other people that had some interest in performing. And so we formed a little theater group there on base at Fort Knox.
Kentucky.
Yeah, in Fort Knox, Kentucky, of all places.
Did you have to speak with a twang or something?
Well, you know, it's a military base, so it's interesting. But, you know, most of the people there were from
all over the world.
All over. Yeah. That's right, exactly. So there were people with twangs.
Not downplayed. I love that. I had a friend of mine, my friend's friend was Vietnamese.
Mm.
She was from Georgia, I think, and she spoke with an accent. I was at a restaurant one day, and I heard somebody talking. Like, wow, that's a southern accent. Turn around, it was her. She's Vietnamese. It's amazing.
Yeah, I know. This doesn't fit the image for some reason. Yeah,
no.
So I didn't really start acting until I got out of the service. So that was like around 1989 or so.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, pretty late in life for me.
You got out of the service in 89.
No. Oh. I got out in I got off active duty in 79, and then I stayed in the Army Reserves. So I have like 38-39 years of actual military
service.
Good
for you. Thank you for the service there.
Oh, thank you.
Appreciate you. And you came out in one piece. Not too bad. I mean, you just look pretty good.
Yes. Well, you know, I think the timing for me was, it depends who you talk to. You know, for many of the career military people, they feel like they need to be in some kind of armed conflict because that's a kind of a good thing to have on your record.
Yeah.
It wasn't that I was trying to avoid it, but it's just that for some reason my timing was either good or bad, depending on your point of view.
Yeah.
But by the time I went into the military on active duty, that was 1971. So they were already pulling out of Vietnam.
Right.
And so I didn't get to go. In fact, Fort Knox, interestingly enough, was a staging area for the POWs. You know, when they released the POWs.
That's Vietnam, how the Vietnamese got in the South.
There you go. And so many of the U.S. soldiers who were released from prisoner of war camps were sent to Fort Knox. And we did their physical exams and
hearing tests.
Debriefing, hearing tests. Yeah, that was part of it. That was kind of interesting. And although prior to them arriving, you know, one of the things they did was they sat us all down and said, whatever you do, do not ask them about what happened over there.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Because, you know, they didn't want to open up any sort of wounds or anything.
Yeah.
So, we greeted them and treated them like they were just returning soldiers and said, hey, you know, how you been? You know, and sit down, we'll do a hearing test and, you know, that kind of stuff. So,
wow. Does your family know these kind of stories?
You know, I mean, I've shared some, but, you know, that's the problem. You know, let me back up a little bit, digressing here. But my dad was part of the 100th Infantry Battalion.
Oh, you know, we did a story on them.
And that's right. And there's a lot more stories to be told because
sure.
a lot of these guys just did not share a lot of their experiences, you know?
Yeah. Can't blame them.
No, of course not.
But I think that's one thing with history that we've got to preserve, we've got to pass down. These young kids probably never even know what happened in Vietnam, let alone World War One and Two.
Yeah, well, you see what they portray in the movies, which is probably not even close to real life, right? So,
good for you. It's amazing, you know, because I went doing this for so long, and I actually documented my parents' life. I hired a videographer about my dad growing up in Hilo.
That's a good
idea.
My
mother grew up in Maui and Haleakala Dairy.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really important for families to be able to know the history of mom and dad, how they met, where they met, and raising six kids. You know, I'm half Katonka, I tell people. I left Hawaii when I was 8, came back when I was 16. I had to leave, though. I had eye surgery in Walter Reed General Hospital when I was young.
Oh, wow.
So I was forced to leave, and my last trip was in Korea, and I didn't like Korea that much at the time. And I came back, and that's why I went to MidPack.
Mm.
But it's just, to me, it's really important. So if you get a chance, if you, you know, talk to your family, if that's important to them.
Yeah, thank you.
Preserve the history. Preserve, know who you are. A lot of people don't know this history about you. They know you're the well-known actor, been all over, but not knowing this.
You know,
this
that's not a bad idea. In fact, that's an excellent idea. You know, we've lost our parents over the years, and you know, when you have a memorial service for them, typically you would do an eulogy and you have to kind of give a little synopsis of their life. And it's amazing what we
everyone
didn't
I've been
know,
to.
What we didn't know, right? So, you know, that prompts us to think, well, gee, maybe I should write down my stuff so that time comes, the kids will have an easier time of, you know, oh, dad left a 4-page piece of history here, and, you know, from the time he was born till now, kind of thing, which is a good idea. I think it's a great idea.
It is. It really
helps,
is.
It helps the next generation.
You know, because of what I do, and I've been doing a reverse mortgage for so long, and I've been involved with the magazine 14 years, that I've been to enough funerals in my life. I don't go to too many anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just amazed. Even my auntie who passed away, you know, I've known her all my life, right? And just amazed what the accomplishment they had.
Yep. Yep, yep. Or parts of their life that you weren't even aware of, you know, which is interesting.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we've had recently had a friend who passed away and went to his memorial service. And when they were going down the list of the things and activities that he was involved in, and you're going, wow, I didn't know that.
And I thought I was his good friend.
Yeah.
But here's something, not to go off topic, but I heard a story recently about, I was talking to somebody about Alzheimer's dementia. And this person said, wow, you know, my mother has it, and she passed away because of that over time, I think 10 years. You know, life expectancy of Alzheimer's dementia is about 10 years now. It's amazing. But anyway, she said, you know, my mother knew what was coming on, and she called every one of her children to tell them about their life.
Yep.
About her life, about raising them. It was an amazing story. So,
yep. Yeah, that's something that, you know, we kind of take for granted.
Really important, guys.
Yep, really so important.
Not to go off topic, but it is so important. And that's why a lot of the young kids today lose about family issues, about integrity, mm-hmm. and about family matters. You know, family is everything, you know. So, anyway.
So, if we can kind of segue here. Sorry. That's kind of what the Kumukahua Theater has been trying to do over the last 52 years, is telling those stories, telling the family stories, telling stories of people growing up here in Hawaii, so that some of the younger folks, you know, who may not have been aware of things that how things were like back in the plantation days, or back even in the 50s and 60s, you know, how was life back then before statehood and that kind of thing, you know? And so a lot of the stories we tell, are dealing with those kinds of topics and kind of real life, you know, slice of real life.
Well, that's what I love about what you guys have been doing. I know last year, earlier this year, couldn't fit in my schedule about the one about Alzheimer's dementia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Were you part of that as well?
I was not, but that was one of the really an excellent.
So I hope production. You can bring it back again.
Yeah. Well, our shows, if it becomes a popular show, we typically will bring it back after a period of time.
I know you extended that one for a while.
It was, and in fact, if I recall, don't quote me here, but I think it's being broadcast on Olelo. The Olelo taped it, and I think they're going to play it.
Oh.
On their station at some point. I don't know when.
Do they do that quite often?
No. That was just, you know, during the pandemic, we had to kind of pivot a bit.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of our shows were done online.
Yeah.
And a lot of the our typical audience members were hesitant to come back in person.
Sure.
Still are. Slowly, they're kind of drifting back. And so a lot of our productions were either directly online with no audience in the theater, or we had it taped. Olelo volunteered to come in and do some taping for us, and then put it on later on once the show.
Well, we do more of that. But anyway, you have, I mean, your list of credits is incredible. I mean, Magnum PI, Hawaii 5-0. You were in what you did last summer.
Right, I know what you.
That's
did
not a
last
local
summer.
One, right?
So maybe it was filmed locally here.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I love that
movie.
The
whole thing was shot locally, right?
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah. The only one I haven't been in, casting directors, listen in now. The only one I haven't been in is NCIS.
Ah.
Yes. So call me.
Shucks, you know, we had a family friend that was the first director for Magnum PI when they brought the show back.
Mm.
You know, and then she went to Hawaii Five-0, and of course Hawaii Five-0 closed down. But when she was here, I've been to the studio and watched film things. It's amazing.
Yeah,
what it takes to film an episode.
You know, in fact, you mentioned about, you know, driving from Waikiki to Waianae in 2 seconds, kind of thing. But when we were at Fort Knox, the original Hawaii Five-0 was on at the time.
Oh yeah.
And so we used to watch religiously because we get to see Hawaii. But that was exactly our reaction. You go, wait. They're going the wrong way on Kalakaua. What's that? You know, and now they're in Waiawa. What is that? You know.
Yeah. So what does it take to be an actor, and how do you get on shows?
Audition,
besides, typically.
I mean, if you're a famous actor known by everybody, then they'll probably call you to have you come in.
Oh, it's just stereotype, though.
Yeah, right. But for most of us, it's an audition process. So
you have to audition.
Correct. So the casting director for the production, whether it's a TV episodic or a movie, will call the agents. And so my agent will then call me saying, okay, they're looking for this type of person, this character. Oh. And so then you go in and audition. Now that's the other thing that pivoted also during the pandemic is that you used to go in person and meet the casting director and audition. But now it's all taped. You know, you have to record it at home and then send it in. So the advantage of that, it gives you a little bit of opportunity to edit and, you know, do it several times until you feel comfortable. But the challenge of that is that for most of us, we just didn't have the technological background to actually do that, you know, because they're saying you need a light, you know, a ring, one of those ring light things. You need an adequate microphone set up. You need a plain wall behind you because they didn't want to see your bookcase and your TV set and all that kind of stuff. And so for most of us, it took a little bit for us to kind of set up our own little recording area. But the advantage is we don't have to go in. And the advantage for the casting director is that they get to see a lot more people than they were able to before. You know, if you can imagine, I have to set up appointments maybe every 15 minutes for people to come in. But it makes it easier for the casting director. Now they can see hundreds of people because it's all on their computer.
So talk to me about Aloha Las Vegas. That's what's going to be coming soon.
Yes, we're in rehearsal now for Aloha Las Vegas. This year will be the seventh time.
Really?
Yeah, it's interesting. And I've been part of pretty much all the productions from the beginning.
As an actor, a director, a producer?
As an actor.
Okay.
Yeah. The first time we did it was 30 years ago.
Are you serious?
1992, yeah. And wow. I played Alvin, who's the romantic, the boyfriend of the daughter, because I was younger then. And then I played Alvin again later on in another production. And then since 2002, I have now pivoted to the character of Wally, who's the patriarch of the family, the one who's contemplating moving to Aloha Las Vegas.
Is that the premise of the story?
The premise of the story, and this Ed Sakamoto wrote this, and he wrote it in the early 90s. And at that time, and actually it's still current today, but at that time there were a lot of Hawaii people moving to Las Vegas. And so the dilemma, of course, is do I want to go? If I go, you know, what do I do when I get there? I gotta get rid of my house here. You know, I have family here.
That's a life-changing
decision. Oh, it's a life-changing decision. And so the premise of Aloha Las Vegas is that Wally is faced with that decision. A good friend of his comes back, who's now living in Las Vegas. He comes back to visit, and he's trying to convince Wally, hey, you should come to Las Vegas with me, and we'll have a good time. You know, you should do that, because Wally had just recently retired. He recently lost his wife, so you know his friend is basically saying, "So you got nothing to hold you here. You should move to Las Vegas," and so that's kind of the premise. And so Wally, throughout the play, is kind of working through this decision process of, do I go? Do I stay? What do I want to do? I don't know. You know, my daughter's still here. My son's still here. You know, so it's a tough decision. When it was written in the early 90s, there was a really large movement of people to Las Vegas. It's still current today because people are still. I was talking to a young man who was driving me kind of an Uber thing, and he's in his early 20s. And he's thinking seriously about moving to Las Vegas for opportunity to earn money and come back. And then it kind of like ties it into a lot of the immigrant stories, because now I'm thinking, okay, so here's this young man whose plan is to go to Las Vegas, earn a lot of money, and then come back to Hawaii. which may or may not ever happen.
So here's a question. Now, yeah. Listening to you talk, if I'm thinking about moving to Las Vegas, should I go watch a show?
Yes. We may throw in some ideas in your head so you can consider them.
So So you're on the you're on the board of Kumu Kahuna Theater.
I am. Yeah. So been on the board for I don't know 20 some odd years.
So there's plays going on all the time. Mm-hmm. So they can go to your website or just give you guys a call.
Go on to our website, give us a call, check to see what's happening.
Give me a price range of the tickets so people can understand.
You know, we've been trying. Our goal has been to keep the ticket prices low.
Yeah, so seniors, I see, $15 to $20.
Yeah. So, ticket prices are typically in that range, around $20, $25. If you buy a season subscription, it's even cheaper.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
really?
You buy season tickets for the whole season.
Maybe I should do that.
Drops down significantly.
Hopefully they can work a deal with me, man.
We can talk.
I know, because if I can't go, I always give it out.
Yes.
I always encourage people to go.
Now, some people don't like season subscriptions because usually when you sign up, you have to specify, you know, what day and show you want to see.
Oh, you have to do that?
Ahead of time. Huh. But that can also change. So, in other words, you know, let's say you say, oh, I've reserved tickets for a particular day and time, but you find that, oh, I got a wedding, I got to go to that day. So you can call the theater beforehand and say, hey, can I change the tickets to another day and time? And that's doable.
Here's a big question. Yes. Where do we park?
Wherever you can.
Downtown.
It's in downtown. Fortunately, we're right across the street from Harbor Court.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so you can park in the Harbor
Court parking lot. Oh, Harbor Court is great.
Yeah, after hours, I think, is like $3 or
$4.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, well, if you go on a Sunday,
yeah,
parking all over downtown.
That's right. You can park on the street if you're lucky enough to find a street. And we have
ample parking
right in front of the theater, too, if you just come and lock out, you know, if somebody just happens
to be on Merchant, right?
We are on Merchant Street.
What's the street going up?
Bethel.
Bethel, yeah.
We're at the corner of Merchant.
And how many does a seat, by the way? It's very cozy, isn't it?
Typically, we can put in somewhere between 100, 120
seats. That's nice. See, I don't like big ones. I like small
during
ones.
The pandemic, we had cut back a little bit, you know, just to keep the social distancing thing. We're starting to put a few seats back in now.
Good.
We're trying to, accommodate as many people as want to come. The challenge is still that I think there's still quite a few people out there who are still a little bit hesitant about, you know, sitting next to somebody you don't know.
So get a booster shot.
Yeah.
I just got my booster and my flu shot the other day.
Right. And we're still requiring masks for everybody who sits in the theater.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're trying to be cautious about that as much as we can anyway.
And you accommodate the physically challenged and wheelchair bound?
Good. We have. Yeah, we can. Okay. We can either, if you can't get out of your chair, then we can move some chairs in our theater space and make sure you have room for your wheelchair. Or if you can get out of your wheelchair, then we can have you move into one of our chairs and then move your wheelchair off to the side.
Lastly, do you need volunteers? Because I know a lot of our listeners are retired, and I tell people when I retire, I want to be a go to Wildlife for 2 hours a week and golf there. I actually wanted to be one of the Walmart or Sam's Club greeters. That's one of my things. Just keep active, you know?
Sure.
And then me volunteer. I live very close to Catholic Charities.
Sure.
Alzheimer's Association. Maybe I want to be a usher like you guys and go
watch. We can use all the volunteers. Whoever, has some time and you want to come see the shows, we can always use ushers. And if you do usher, then you get to either watch the show that night, or if you can't watch the show that night, then you can get the tickets to come back on another night and watch the show. If you like working with your hands, we have to put up sets.
Oh, really?
So if you're handy with the hammer and stuff like that, if you want to, you know, do something more physical, we can use some assistance building our sets. Typically, we have to move the chairs in and out. I put it in just before the show, and then at the end of the show, we need to take all the chairs out, kind of thing. So we can always use people, you know, physically, who are physically able to.
And when are the shows normally? On the weekends?
Our shows run Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Typically, it's 8 o'clock
on
Thursday, Friday, Saturday, 8 o'clock p.m. And then on Sundays, our shows are at 2.
Oh, I like 2.
Yeah. A lot of the...
yeah.
older folks, like the 2 o'clock show.
Yeah, because weekends, I mean, 8 o'clock's a good time, though, if they're up that late.
Yeah.
But parking's easier than that time. I worked downtown for, gosh, 20-plus years.
Well, you know, a lot of people make it a night out, so to speak. Yeah? So they'll go someplace earlier and have dinner
and
then come over to the show. And watch the show, and then Sunday is the reverse, right? You come watch
Murphy's
the show.
Murphy's is right nearby.
And then you go off to dinner.
Murphy's is nearby. Yeah. Good for you. Yeah. So one last tip for our listeners about your passion or volunteering. What would you say about Kumukuhu Theater and your career in acting?
The first play I ever did in my whole life was at Kumukuhu Theater.
Wow.
Yeah, and it was an Itsakamoto play. It was called Manoa Valley. And that was an interesting play because it takes place in 1959, the year of statehood. And that's kind of the story is woven around the whole concept of, oh, things are going to change now that we're a state kind of thing. And so that was the first play I ever did. And so I've been involved with Kumu since then. That was, I think, 1989. Not always on the board. I didn't join the board until much later, but always involved. You know, the mission of Kumu has always been to tell the stories, tell local stories, tell stories of interest. Some of the plays we do aren't necessarily Hawaii plays or take place in Hawaii, but we do it because we think that the people who come to see the show would be interested in the topic and in the story. But I think majority of the plays that we do are stories about growing up and living in Hawaii. Some of them aren't pretty. You know, we've done some plays about the meth epidemic and some, you know, other things on the darker side of our society. But we feel like that's part of life too, right? You need to see
that. I'm a big believer in that. Yeah. I don't like to paint a rosy picture about life, especially on aging.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really important to let people know it happening here in our own state.
Yep.
And we need to hopefully figure out ways to slow it down or prevent it.
Yeah. So that was the big draw on Who You Again, which is the production you were talking about earlier, which dealt directly with Alzheimer's. And so, so Kumu has been trying to do those kinds of stories, and that's kind of why I stay involved, because I really feel like there's still a lot of stories out there that we have not told. We have to find a writer, of course. That's always the challenge. You know, you got to find somebody to write it.
Really the big key part of any theater show or TV show, isn't it? But anyway, Dan Secchi, thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Kumukuhu Theater, check them out. Aloha Las Vegas. I'll be going this time because I missed the other past plays, but I'll be going. So hopefully on a Sunday. But anyway, thank you so much. And thank you for telling your story.
You're welcome.
And helping us promote Kumukuhu Theater, because that's one of the things we want to get people out.
Thank you.
And we have so many great local actors here. You know?
Thank you. We do. So we do.
You do, right? Yeah.
Thank you.
Anyway, guys, appreciate your time. Yeah. We're going to take a short break and we'll be right back.
In 2021, take the confusion out of Medicare. The Copeland Insurance Group will help you understand the exciting new plans with increased benefits for seniors 65 and above, veterans, the disabled, and those that qualify for extra help. Contact Margaret Wong with the Copeland Insurance Group at 808-591-4877. 808-591-4877. Mahalo.
You've worked hard to make it to this point, faithfully paying your mortgage and putting money into your home. Now you can tap into this equity with the reverse mortgage loan designed specifically for those age 60 and older. Percy Ihara, Hawaii's reverse mortgage specialist, NMLS number 582-944. Let him show you how you can use a reverse mortgage to gain a new source of funds, just as you would with a traditional home equity loan that you would get at a local bank, but with additional benefits. Give him a call at 808-234-3117, and he'll show you how a reverse mortgage could be an important tool for you. He lives and works right here in Hawaii and understands Hawaii borrowers. Not applicable in all states. Some states may impose a higher age requirement. Visit reversefunding.com/equity-elite for details. Reverse Mortgage Funding LLC is an equal housing lender. 1455 Broad Street, Bloomfield, New Jersey, 07003. NMLS number 1019941. Telephone 888-494-0882. For licensing information, go to nmlsconsumeraccess.org. Licensed Mortgage Banker, New York State Department of Financial Services. Again, call 808-234-3117.
Welcome back to Generations Radio. I'm Percy E. Howard, your host here. Thank you for taking the time to listen to the show. And Dan Secchio, you guys, when you hear his voice, you may not put the voice with the face, but look at the local shows. Come down to the Kumukuhea Theater. He's a well-known local actor here. He's been on stage everywhere. He's been on Magnum PI, Hawaii Five-O. He did many shows that you've seen in commercials. So we're talking about Kumukuhea Theater. I love going to theater. I love going to concerts. And it's something that we're just encouraging you guys. A lot of you guys are retired. Check it out. We have a lot of great local talent. And this one, Aloha Las Vegas, is if you're thinking about going to Las Vegas, you might want to attend. But it's just a neat story that I've seen around. And I can't believe it's been around for 30 years. Anyway, this segment of the show, we have the director of Aloha Las Vegas, Mr. Harry. Harry, what's your last name again?
Harry Wong.
That's right. I have it here. Sorry, I'm off my phone. I forgot my information, my email here. But anyway, you're the director of Aloha Las Vegas.
Yes, I am.
Wow. But you're younger than Dan says. But you've been involved for a long time in the theater here at Kumukuhea Theater, haven't you?
Oh, yeah. Actually, when Kumukuhea started, it was a student organization at the University of Hawaii at Manoa. So,
oh, wow.
In the late 80s, I was still an undergraduate, and Dennis Carroll, the founder, one of the founders of the theater, he asked me if I wanted to be on the board, because you had to have students on the board if you were a student organization. And then a few years later, they became a for real nonprofit, separate from the university.
Wow.
And so, yeah, I was on the board from 1989 to 1997, when a job opened up at the theater to become artistic director, and I applied and I became artistic director.
Wow. Give our audience, you know, most of our listeners are retired or going to be retired or thinking about retirement. Like myself, I'm 62 now. But give us a little bit of your background. You've been all over the place on tour.
Oh, yeah. I was actually a philosophy major at the University of Hawaii. And then I had to take a lot of classes to graduate. So my friend told me, my friend Junior, he told me that if I take acting one, all the other classes are upper division level and you can get credit for that. Because I was just going to get my philosophy degree, and I was hoping to go and work for my uncle, Charles Asagi. And he owned the chicken hatchery here on Oahu. So I thought I was just going to work at the chicken hatchery for a while. I became the assistant director to a play, The Conversion of Ka'aumanu, about when Ka'aumanu converted to Christianity. They were going to tour it to Edinburgh, Scotland, to the Edinburgh Theatre Festival, and then to Washington, D.C., and then to the L.A. Theatre Festival in one summer. And then all kinds of lucky things happened, and I got to go. And so the theater in Edinburgh was astounding, and it changed my life. And then I wanted to become, I wanted to work in the theater, like as a director of plays. And then when I came back, I applied to the University of Hawaii to get my master's in the fine arts of directing. And then getting to see all the theater there in Edinburgh, I don't know what is a good way of saying it. I rip off something I saw over there back in 1990 on almost every show that I direct. Yeah. The theater was inspiring and amazing. And then after I graduated, I became a Alan Lee Hughes Fellow at Arena Stage, which is like a big, big theater in Washington, D.C. And then when I was there, I saw theater in D.C., in Baltimore, in New York, getting to see a lot of those different productions were amazing.
Wow, yeah. And you all, but you, I know you mentioned directing, but you actually also act as well, right?
To me, it doesn't matter if you're a writer, if you're running the lights, if you're building the sets, if you're designing the sets, if you're creating sound, if you're making costumes, if you're directing. If you haven't acted in front of a live audience in a play, it makes it impossible, I think, to do all of those jobs well. Hmm. So that same man, his name was Dennis Carroll. He was from Australia. He worked 15 years before he even considered as an actor, before he considered directing and then moving on academically. After I took his playwriting class, which was only the second theater class I ever took, he's standing in the halls at Kennedy Theater at the University of Hawaii, and he asked me, "Well, how are you? What would you like to do next?" And I said, "Oh, you know, I think I'd like to try directing." And then he goes, "Oh my God, you people think you can take two classes and direct a play? You know, like this, you have to act, you have to act." And then, after that, I was like, "Oh my God!" So then I auditioned for everything I could, getting into like any production, like new plays, classic plays, and then, and it's true, you know, like that. If you don't spend a little bit time, if you don't spend some time on the boards, then you might build a set that's impossible for the actors to walk in, or you might design a costume that makes it impossible for the actor to move the way they need to move in the play. And so then as long as you've had a little of that experience, you can create things that are not just beautiful and evocative, but then also functional.
That makes a lot of sense. I should ask my director, family friend of ours. She's done several shows, CSI, I can't remember the other shows. But she's a traveling director, and she's done all kinds of shows around the country. I think she's in Budapest right now doing a show. I should ask her. She's not from Hawaii, but she's a family friend of ours for many years. But anyway, the list of productions you've been involved with, The Last Hawaiian Soldier and Fishing for Wives. Most recently, mm-hmm. you did Uapau, The Watcher of Waipuna, Shipwrecked on mm-hmm. the Body Beautiful, Tat's Dancing Man, Demigods, yeah. Anonymous, Living Room, The Conversation, Conversion of, Kahumanu, and mm-hmm. what I want to talk about, Aloha Las Vegas. You've been doing this for 20 years before you directed this show?
I believe I first directed it like 20 years ago. When the play went up, it was my 20th high school reunion.
Really?
And then now this year is my 40th high school reunion. And I'm not going to make it. I'm going to go hang out with my friends, I think, after the show is done. I first directed it 20 years ago. But then before that, it was done when the theater was still... traveling theater, kind of like we went from place to place, and the first production was done at Tenney Theater, you know, over by the Capitol,
right.
On the grounds of St. Andrews. And actually, Dan Secchi, the person you just talked to, he played a different role. He was younger, obviously, and he played Alvin, the character of Alvin, and then now he's playing the patriarch of the family.
Wow, mm-hmm. interesting. And he said, besides directing it, you're also acting in it, right? How do you do behind direct yourself?
Well, I have a very good assistant director, who I was hoping I could just credit as co-directing with me, but he said, no, you know, we're basically doing the play as you directed it. So then he helps out a lot. So then when I'm on stage, then he keeps an eye out on everything and gives us notes. I decided to act in the play because the two men who played the character of Alvin before, one of them passed away, Tony Solis, and then the other one was busy in another show, Jim Ina. And I believe he's understudying, yeah, the role. Dan and another actor, his name is Alan Okubo. They were in the production I did 20 years ago, and they've been in various remounts of the show, yeah, and tours of the show. And they asked me, and then because, you know, like they've supported me and always coming out for shows, and they're real believers in the show. They asked me if I wanted to act in the show. And then I had to ask my family if it was okay, because it takes a lot of time, right?
Sure.
If you're an actor. And they said okay. I had to take my words to heart, yeah, that I hadn't acted in 20 years. And so maybe I was beginning to forget what it's like to be an actor.
Hmm.
You know, and then, so then, like, when I'm giving them direction, I'm saying, you know, like, get off book right now. You know? It's like, oh, well, I haven't had time. No, just do it right now. Because then I like to read the scene, like, two times and then have the actors get up on their feet and have them just call line. And so then now that I had to do that myself, I'm like, oh, my God, this is so hard. Yeah. So I think it's helping me realize, I don't know, that I need to be more sympathetic to the actor's challenges.
Sure.
And I wouldn't get that if I didn't have to put myself up there on stage too.
You know, Hawaii has so much great talent. I'm a Mid-Pacific grad, and several years ago, I think when I was maybe 25 years ago, I went to a theater play at Mid-Pac. They have a theater in the back there, and I was blown away by the talent. This is like in the mid-90s. Like, wow. I was just amazed at the talent and the theater at Mid-Pac. You know, are you guys getting involved with local high schools to help mentor them?
Yeah, actually, with Mid-Pac, a number of their students come and audition for the shows here. Or they did, yeah, when... what is a good way of saying it? When things were looser.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
And then they could spend time outside of the school. In fact, the last show of this season, it's called Folks You Meet in Longs. It's written by Lee Cataluna.
Yeah.
It's going to be directed by a Mid-Pac student.
When is that?
A graduate of Mid-Pac student.
Next year? Later this year?
Later this season, so next year in January, in May.
Wow, you guys got to come back. You got to send me some information on that next year. But you know, Hawaii's got so much talent. But since you've traveled quite a bit, how does Hawaii stack up to the theaters and the talent on the mainland?
Well, you know, I believe there's like three odd answers to that.
Okay.
One of them is that, you know, like, Ron Bright at Castle,
uh-huh.
or Jim Nakamoto at McKinley,
right?
And then a lot of the current teachers, some of them I went to school with at the university, they saw talent in their students, and they encouraged it and they grew it, and those students who were remarkably talented, went away. You know, they either went to universities, theater programs on the continent, or they just went straight into the business.
Hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so then there is a lot of talent, and out of high school, a lot of them leave.
Sure.
Yeah. And then there's the ones who stay, who may have done stuff in high school. Yeah. And then life caught up with them. You know, they got married, they had kids.
Sure.
And then now their kids are in high school, and they go, you know, I really like doing theater. And then they come back to the community theaters we have here. And then you see that talent again. So that was the thing with Dan Secchi. Yeah. The first show he did here was called Manoa Valley by the same writer, Ed Sakamoto.
Right.
And then when he got up there, I was like, oh my goodness. I mean, I was a kid. I was still, like I said, I was still in college. And, I thought, oh, where did this guy come from? You know, he's amazing. You know, have you ever done it? Oh, no, I haven't really done that much. And, like, I did some radio things. And I was like, oh. And so then there's a lot of that. So then there's a lot of those people, too, who are coming back to it, who had a spark, you know, and then they're, and now they're getting to express it here in Hawaii.
Yeah, Dan was mentioned he was in the military in Kentucky before he came back to Hawaii, you know, and you're absolutely right. You know, they might have done theater when they're younger. Life happens, and they find it. And that's one of the things we're trying to encourage people and our listeners, that if you have a passion or an inkling of what it's like to act or help out and volunteer or help build stages or costumes, get involved. I mean, you guys are a small entity downtown, but it's so good. I love the plays that you're putting on, like Aloha Las Vegas. I was actually, and I asked you, when I asked Dan earlier, if I was thinking about going to Las Vegas, do you think I should come to the play?
You know what? I just want to say one thing, so you know, I'm not avoiding your question.
Okay.
Yeah. So then you know. On the mainland, I see the plays I see there. There are a lot of talented people, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'll be honest with you, some of them have heart, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But then the community theaters here, there isn't really competition between the theaters here. But what I see is the joy of performing. Do you know what I mean? I say that with all honesty. There used to be a theater called Army Community Theater. And then, like, technically, you know, like that, you could fault the performers or you could fault the director. And I'm sure you can do that here at Kumukuhua Theater, too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. But you see this joy of performing that I see a lot of times lacking in the best shows up there. I mean, which, you know, like the singing is amazing, you know, like that their voices are astounding. The money they have to build sets and technical things is great. Yeah. But then over here you see just pure storytelling and connection with the community. And, that I wouldn't trade. With other places.
Well, I think that's really more important, you know,
yeah.
Especially understanding local style, local culture, community. And I get that. And it's so important for our listeners here to check it out. I mean, just to check it out. Tickets range anywhere from 15 to 20 bucks. I know for seniors, and I know your matinees on Sunday, which I'll probably be going to. But it's just really important for get people to get involved. Like I said, and Dan was saying, volunteer and go. If you volunteer, you get free tickets. You know, that's what I want to do when I retire. But we got to close up here. But what keeps you going? Is it just the love of the theater, love of directing? What keeps you going?
Well, my family, yeah, my wife and my daughter, the support I get, because, like, you know, it's a beautiful life, but it's a hard business. Yeah, theater.
Yeah.
David Mamet said that. And it's true, but then it's their support. And then the other day I met some friends, not necessarily my high school friends, and they're all doing other kinds of things. And they asked me, oh, you know, Harry, why are you so happy? And it's because I get to do what I love. You know what I mean? Being able to do something you're passionate about, that you believe in, it's like the most, I don't know, rejuvenating thing. That's what keeps me going, I think. And then, you know, like, bringing people into the theater. You know, when I grew up, my parents never said, hey, Harry, we go watch one theater play, you know? They never said that. We went bowling or went to the beach or went to a drive-in movie. But then it's being able to try and bring people who think that the theater is just something they were forced to read in high school, you know, like Julius Caesar.
Mm-hmm.
And then showing that you can see yourself on stage. Yeah, that this story is the story that I connect to because it's happening in my family or it's happening to my friend. And it's hearing that and seeing that, I think, that probably keeps me going most.
Yeah, that's really important. Passion is everything. And that's why I do the magazine. That's why I've done this for so long and continue to do this and support the community and support entities like yourself at Kumukuhua Theater. So, Harry, thank you so much for your time. I encourage everybody. I'm going to go to see the play, even though I'm not looking at going to Las Vegas. But I just love watching local talent. And we have so much talent here, guys. We got to encourage and we got to support them. So everybody, find some time, go online or call up Kumukuhua Theater. Harry, thank you so much for your time. Appreciate what you guys do at the theater so much. So I appreciate it. So anyway, guys, every Sunday morning from 8 to 9 a.m. here on 101.1. Please check us out. It'll actually go online. The show will be on our website, generations808.com, the next day. So check it out. All our past shows are on there, many on aging and entertainment and financial professional, business professionals. So check us out. Appreciate your time, everybody. As always, everybody, have a great weekend. Aloha and live well.
In 2021, take the confusion out of Medicare. The Copeland Insurance Group will help you understand the exciting new plans with increased benefits for seniors 65 and above, veterans, the disabled, and those that qualify for extra help. Contact Margaret Wong with the Copeland Insurance Group at 808-591-4877. 808-591-4877. Mahalo.
The combination of interest rates at near all-time lows and home values at near all-time highs create a great opportunity to get the most out of your home's built-up equity. Percy Ihara, Hawaii's reverse mortgage specialist at MLS number 582-944. If you are 60 or older, you might qualify for a reverse mortgage loan that could turn your equity into extra funds for retirement. Take a few minutes to visit with him about ways this plan could work for you. As a certified senior advisor and being certified in long-term care planning, he has helped many older homeowners just like you to retire more freely. Call him now at 808-234-3117. That's 808-234-3117. Not applicable in all states. Some states may impose a higher age requirement. Visit reversefunding.com/equity-elite for details. Reverse Mortgage Funding LLC is an equal housing lender. 1455 Broad Street, Bloomfield, New Jersey, 07003. NMLS number 1019941. Telephone 888-494-0882. For licensing information, go to nmlsconsumeraccess.org. Licensed Mortgage Banker, New York State Department of Financial Services. Again, call 808-234-3117.